This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the number of people that are impacted now by the overall disasters, including conflict, has risen to an unprecedented level.
That's Shukri Ahmed of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization talking about the number of people facing severe food insecurity. We'll have full details coming up. Also, African migrants that were mistakenly reported as missing from a boat sinking this week were found to have survived. And we'll have a preview of President Donald Trump's upcoming meeting with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt as the two leaders meet officially in Washington on April 3rd. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, President Trump has approved a Pentagon request to be more aggressive in attacking al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. Besides a possible increase in airstrikes, U.S. Special Forces would be able to accompany Somali National Army troops and their AU allies. A Pentagon spokesman says the move will help increase pressure on al-Shabaab and reduce the risk to partner forces when they conduct operations. The Associated Press first reported on the Pentagon's request in February. The head of the U.S. Africa Command, General Thomas Waldheiser, recently told Congress there was a need for more flexibility and timeliness. He said that Somalia would not become a free fire zone. In other news on Somalia, the latest humanitarian assessment says severe drought conditions continue to worsen. More than 440,000 people have been displaced since November of last year due to drought. The majority of them have moved from rural to urban areas. That figure could increase if the April to June GOO rainy season is poor. The assessment warns conditions in parts of Somalia are similar to those in 2011 when famine hit the country. However, humanitarian agencies have greater access to some areas than they did in 2011. Nearly 2 million people received cash assistance and vouchers this month alone to help families meet basic needs. Cholera and acute watery diarrhea continue to be a problem. Nearly 19,000 cases have been reported since the beginning of the year, with more than 440 deaths. About 108 million people around the world faced severe food insecurity in 2016, an increase from 80 million in 2015. That's the finding of a new report released today by the UN, European Union, USAID, and others. Conflict and drought are among the main reasons for the increase. The report says the demand for humanitarian and resilience building will escalate this year due to the famine risk in South Sudan, Somalia, Northeast Nigeria, and Yemen. Shukri Ahmed is the Deputy Strategic Program Leader for Resilience at the Food and Agriculture Organization. From Rome, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The number of people that are impacted now by the overall disasters, including conflict, has risen to an unprecedented level. So I think this is the main message, and central to this is conflict. It used to always be driving some of the food insecurities in the past, but this time the combination of the different countries happening is actually very central. I think this is the main message coming out.
And the figures, according to the report, show an increase from 80 million people in 2015 to 108 million people last year. That is a dramatic increase.
That is a huge increase. And that increase actually overall is when you see Syria, Yemen, Somalia, which is unabated conflict, now the Lake Chad region, Central African Republic, and all these combined are actually bringing people on the brink of starvation. And the situation now is exacerbated actually in the last 2 years by the El Nino phenomenon. The El Nino phenomenon this year, in some instances, actually, it is in itself a very record-breaking, and some say more than 80 years, but others actually say the combination of it and consecutive seasons of failure of the rainfalls, actually they say this is a record. It has never happened in such an instance and in such strength.
But the report also says that it expects the situation to get even worse.
This is now worse because the conflict is continuing. However, on the other hand, and we're not yet fully sure, but the forecast of the weather in the next 3 to 4 months are very, very crucial. And some indications are showing that it is already late in certain areas. And if it doesn't come in sufficient quantity this time or in amount, it can really become catastrophic because some areas have lost their livestock, a lot of deaths of livestock in several countries, and this then would simply escalate to the situation. For a lot of them, between March and May is the main season, and then for others, it continues into June, July, and August. So we are really looking to these areas with very big trepidation, and we are very anxious that this may actually turn out to be a very bad year, and that would be catastrophic.
Do you take into account situations like the invasion of the fall armyworms in a number of countries in Africa?
We do that, but that is more or less under control. Some localized damage has been done. However, we have really improved the way countries and the international organizations work in these areas, so the containment more or less are much better, but it needs to improve in its own right. There are certain positive indications in certain parts where we have a very good early warning systems nowadays, and we have now moved into linking these early warning systems to early action. On the other hand, there are some infrastructural developments that countries themselves have done, and Ethiopia is a good example. 1984, actually, there were millions of people affected and hundreds of thousands died from famine. This time around, the actual economic growth and infrastructural growth that was happening in the last several years have helped people. Even before any assistance came, they simply were going to the next towns easily, which used to be a big difficulty. So there are certain things that we have seen improving. But now it is simply a combined thing that really created this load.
So what about those areas where, okay, you had the early warning for like Somalia and we heard about South Sudan. So what do you do about those situations that are ongoing and you don't have the infrastructure in place to deal with it?
Now we need a huge assistance. What is being done, for instance, in South Sudan is dropping from planes. Actually, in certain areas where it is difficult to get into, it is dropping through planes and making sure that we actually reach out to these people. But wherever we can move through the ground, we are doing it.
How much more easily might some of these problems be solved if there were political solutions in some of these countries?
This is the crux of the matter. I think had we had not these conflicts and problems, this would have been contained already in a way that doesn't require such a huge resource.
That's Shukri Ahmed of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. From Rome, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Well, South Africans woke up today to learn that President Jacob Zuma had overhauled his cabinet, firing, among others, a well-regarded finance minister who had been critical of him. Opponents of Zuma say they will protest the reshuffle, which comes as Zuma faces escalating pressure to resign. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
President Jacob Zuma says he reshuffled his cabinet because he wants to bring in people who can bring energy, experience, and expertise to the job. His middle-of-the-night announcement sidelined a public works minister who started his career as an activist, removed a tourism minister with decades of political experience, along with a finance minister who has served in the position on 2 separate occasions. All 3 former ministers had challenged the president directly in the last year, as Zuma sunk deeper in national opinion polls over a series of corruption scandals. Zuma has been asked to resign by the opposition, by some high-ranking members of his own party, and by a recently deceased anti-apartheid icon who was close friends with former President Nelson Mandela. Zuma's spokesman did not respond to multiple calls from VOA Friday for comment on the reshuffle. In separate statements, both the Women's League and the Youth League of the ruling African National Congress said they welcomed the reshuffle, saying it would bring more young and female leaders into government. Independent political analyst Ralph Matega says Zuma's move is sure to strengthen his tenuous political position.
You could say that this is a master stroke from President Jacob Zuma. He has strengthened himself. He has actually sent a message even to the branches of the ANC that he's still firmly in charge and they shouldn't listen to anyone else, but they should look his direction for leadership.
But the opposition Democratic Alliance Party says they will fight the move by bringing a no-confidence vote against Zuma in Parliament. Opposition Party spokesman Mabina Siabe says the cabinet changes don't serve South Africans, but only help Zuma.
The only qualification is that these are people who are beholden to the president and will do whatever he says, even if it's not in the interest of the Constitution or the people of South Africa. We are in a troubled space at the moment for as long as President Jacob Zuma sits in the Union Building and continues to administer South Africa's affairs.
Previous no-confidence measures against Zuma have failed due to the ANC's majority in Parliament. And so activists like Mark Haywood of protest movement Save South Africa say they need to make their outrage heard by lawmakers. Haywood spoke to VOA as he headed to a march Friday in Pretoria, the capital, opposing the cabinet changes.
It's not a cabinet reshuffle. It is a coup. That is the best term for it. The president has abused his legal powers to appoint to the cabinet not people who are going to serve the interests of South Africa, but people who are going to serve his interests to gain control over the finances, over the bank of this country.
The last time Zuma made a significant change to his cabinet, in late 2015, when he suddenly and inexplicably fired another highly regarded finance minister, and then went through two finance ministers in 3 days, the South African currency took a hit. On Friday morning, the rand went into free fall again, showing the most severe percentage drop since that 2015 reshuffle. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Well, today, the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, had a rare piece of good news in Europe's deadly migrant crisis. A Gambian survivor was mistaken when he said he thought his fellow passengers had drowned when they packed rubber dinghies sank earlier this week. Well, in fact, 140 of them were rescued at the same time as he was lifted from the Mediterranean. He was suffering from severe hydration, hypothermia, and was semi-conscious at the time of rescue. However, one body was recovered and five people remain unaccounted for. Reporter Josephine McKenna provided me with an update on this rescue and other migrant news.
How wonderful to have a good news story. It seems that nearly all the migrants that were reported missing, feared dead, have been rescued and safely brought to Italy. We're talking about 141 have been rescued and safely brought to shore. They include 117 men, 14 women and 10 minors. And most of them appear to have come from Nigeria, Mali and Gambia. So that's really exciting news. And there seemed to be a lot of confusion because the one survivor that was rescued by a Spanish naval vessel didn't realize that the others had been saved by an Italian Coast Guard boat and they were taken to separate locations. And that's why we had that initial report that suggested that those people were missing.
And also, I understand he was in a semi-conscious state, so he wasn't sure of his surroundings.
Yeah, a young fellow from Gambia, and he was semi-conscious. He was taken to hospital quickly to the island of Lampedusa off the coast of Sicily, so he wasn't in a clear frame of mind. And there were emotional scenes when his friends told rescue workers that, in fact, they were part of that same group and they were reunited with that survivor. That's great news. On the other hand, Italian police also arrested four alleged people smugglers in the last couple of days, linked to some of these rescues. Jews, two from Senegal, one from Gambia, and one from Guinea.
Also, I understand in this same journey that there was a body that was recovered and five people do remain unaccounted for.
That's right. As part of this group, I'm not sure how many boats were involved. I saw up to six different vessels. One body was recovered, and the International Organization for Migration said that there are five migrants still unaccounted for that were traveling on those packed boats across the Mediterranean from the north coast of Libya.
Today also, there was an NGO that held a press conference regarding migrants. What did they have to say?
The NGO SOS Mediterranee held a press conference in the Sicilian port of Catania today to stress that as an NGO rescuing migrants in the Mediterranean, it has absolutely no connection to people smugglers in Libya. And as we know, in recent weeks, there's been a lot of speculation, claims by various people, including a Sicilian prosecutor who claimed that there was some kind of link or NGOs were benefiting in some way from this people smuggling route. SOS said absolutely not. They are committed to being on the front line, to rescuing migrants, and stressed that every hour makes a difference when people are trying to survive, when they're in the water, and they will continue doing the work that they do there.
There's another group who also says they're going to be stepping up their rescue of migrants. Can you tell us about them?
Yes, MOAS, which stands for Migrant Offshore Aid Station, is leaving on its fifth mission since it was launched in 2014. It's stepping up its operations. The charity says it's already rescued 33,000 men, women, and children, and now it wants to have daily patrols. It has one vessel, and it's also manned by a professional search and rescue team and doctors and paramedics, and they are going to continue their operations and step them up a notch in the Mediterranean as well.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 22 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. U.S. President Donald Trump declares part of Somalia an area of active hostilities, granting U.S. troops broader authority to launch airstrikes against al-Shabaab. The latest humanitarian assessment says severe drought conditions continue to worsen. More than 440,000 people have been displaced since November of last year due to drought. And about 108 million people around the world face severe food insecurity in 2016, an increase from 80 million in 2015. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The White House says President Donald J. Trump looks forward to welcoming President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt for an official visit to Washington on April 3rd. An official statement said the leaders will build on the positive momentum they have built between the two countries. They will discuss a range of bilateral and regional issues, including how to defeat ISIS and pursue peace and stability in the region. Many Egyptians are expecting positive changes to bilateral relations, which were perceived as strained under President Obama. Khalil Jassen, executive director of the Arab Center in Washington, spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi on what should the Egyptian side expect from the Trump administration.
We are for improvement in relations between Egypt, being the leading Arab country, and the United States, regardless of who's in power, in Egypt or in Washington. And we hope that the Egyptian government has come to Washington with some clear ideas in response, first of all, to the criticisms within the administration of the state of affairs with regards to democracy and human rights in Egypt, in order to answer this criticism in a meaningful way, because without a convincing answer in this regard, it's going to be an impediment to improved relations between the two countries at various levels.
President Trump said that he would establish an alliance with friends like Egypt to combat terrorism. Would that give Egyptian president more ground to get extra economic and military assistance?
I have no doubt that it would. After all, U.S. bilateral relations with the Arab world are a bit wider, actually a lot wider, than the counterterrorism agenda. This is a relationship that wasn't born just in January when Trump arrived to the White House. This is a relationship that goes back for tens of years. It has its long history. It has its own kind of diverse components, economic, cultural, human rights, defense, security, and so on. So while acknowledging that security is one item, there are some other issues that need to be factored in, issues that we haven't heard from President Trump as to where his heart is or to where his policy is going to head in the future. So we hope that the administration would take into consideration a role for its Arab partners a bit wider than just counterterrorism.
Would the Trump administration push for more freedoms and better transition to democracy in Egypt, or resort to the old policy of the U.S., preferring stability and security at the expense of democracy and human rights?
Thus far, it doesn't seem to me that the administration has a clear vision of where it wants to basically lead its relationship, bilateral relationships, with its Arab partners. Thus far, all we've heard is basically security and counterterrorism. And in this regard, to me, the omission here is democracy and human rights. So sooner or later, this administration is going to realize that there is a big discrepancy between the two. There has been some shortcomings in the past from U.S. Foreign policy. No wonder, for example, in our public opinion surveys that we conduct annually at the Arab Center in Washington, and we're about to release the 2016 Arab Opinion Index, the U.S. is not viewed favorably by a majority. I would say about 70 or more percent of the Arab public, including in Egypt, including in Saudi Arabia, including in countries that are close allies with the United States, because of the lack of emphasis on other aspects of U.S. foreign policy.
President Sisi is the first Arab leader to meet President Trump after the Arab summit in Jordan, which called for the two-state solution.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the Egyptian president would be keen to push for a more balanced, active role by the Trump administration in this conflict?
The declared policy of Egypt is very clear in this regard. It is for the two-state solution. The problem is we have a president in the United States who doesn't seem to be so enthusiastic about it. I mean, he left it vague, two states, one state, as he said. He doesn't seem to be totally determined to pursue a specific direction in foreign policy in this regard. And we hope that the Arab leaders, including President Sisi, including King Abdullah of Jordan, including Mahmoud Abbas of Palestine, as they come to town over the next few weeks, will try to impress upon the president to take, again, the history of peacemaking in the Middle East seriously.
That was Khalil Jassin, executive director of the Arab Center in Washington. He was speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Peter Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.